Pod Taco, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 443, Amending Cartographer, recorded live on September 25th, 2014. Hello everyone, welcome to Pod Tackler, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your other host, Biowolf.
And tonight we are joined by a very special guest, hearkening from the custom edition side of things of the Halo Universe. He's been making the rounds on YouTube and a couple of different gaming sites, news sites, and recently featured on HBO and, from what he just told me earlier, Kotaku. So we are welcoming Masters Leet to the podcast. Welcome, dude.
Hey, how's it going?
Going pretty good. You have been hard at work on a project that we actually talked about, I want to say 2 months ago, when you started to put out your trailer and things blew up. And you're actually on the custom map team, which is a team dedicated to making custom content for Halo Custom Edition. Lots of custom in there. But you've recently come out with a trailer talking about some of the stuff you're remaking for the campaign of Halo 1. So why don't you give us a little bit of information on what CMT is, what SPV3 is, and what you do within that group.
All right. Well, to start off, CMT, we're a team that's been around for, we're going to be around 10 years this November, who've been making maps and custom content for Halo Custom Edition for the computer, for those that don't know. Based on what we put together, because not every website over the 10-year period is still up, we've had around 2 million downloads in 10 years. And we have two projects in development right now. One should be releasing next month. That's the Silent Cartographer Evolved, which is a reimagination of everyone's favorite level, Silent Cartographer, with all from the ground up, all new weapon set that's all rebalanced. And then the second project is SPV3, which is a remake of the entire Halo campaign, plus a few missions, with a focus on expanding Halo 1's gameplay and adding in different things from later games and books, movies, and media. And the hope is to have it all working together in a fun, balanced environment that people can go through and replay as many times as they want. The possibilities are designed to be endless with it.
That's pretty cool. I know I've been a big fan of your guys' work for a while. That you guys worked on the original SPV 1 that you guys put out. And I remember it was either that one or SPV 2 where you actually introduced hunters into the very first level of Halo CE. And I thought that was, when I first went through it, I'm like, wow, this is really difficult. But you guys have been making big strides within the custom edition side of Halo. And I think, as far as I'm aware, you're probably one of the more well-known names when it comes to actually doing stuff on custom edition. Would that be fair to say?
Well, that's probably only because we're the ones who have stuck around with it for 10 years. But there's a lot of other really well-known people and a lot of really awesome work being done, too.
Nice. So, for those who don't know, what is Halo Custom Edition? Why don't you give us a little background on it?
This is kind of a long story.
Well, we got time, so spill your heart out.
I think most people here have heard of Gearbox. They did Borderlands. They were tasked with with porting Halo to the computer in 2003, and part of what was being done was they wanted to have an editing kit where people could create their own maps. This, like, predates DLC and even before Xbox Live really took off. But there was some stuff with Microsoft, certain things that had to be met for those days. The game had to be on a CD, 56K compatible netcode, which required some extensive rewrites to the game. So eventually Halo Custom Edition was released as a free add-on for Halo PC with a whole different file format so people could compile and distribute their own maps and put whatever they wanted inside them. So the game's been around. That was released May 2003, almost a year after Halo on the computer was released. And for a while, it had a really low population, like only 200 to 300 people on at a time. But surprisingly, the game's lived on through Halo 2's release, Halo 3, ODST, Reach 4, Halo Wars. Not that we have much in common with Halo Wars. But the game's actually kept on growing through the years. It has a real dedicated fan base, and it's also really popular in countries where people can't afford to have a console or a connection to Xbox Live. So there is a large non-English speaking community for the game as well, which seems to only be growing.
Very cool. So as far as some of the stuff that goes on with Custom Edition, I know there's been a lot of, at least like during the summer, there's lots of effort to make new maps. And we've seen things such as Halo 3 maps get made, Halo 2 maps get made within Halo Custom Edition. And it's interesting to see that there's a lot of these custom mappers and modders kind of make their mark within a game that itself is, 13 years old now?
Well, I mean, the engine was developed in 2000 to 2001, probably more. I mean, everything's kind of cloudy on Halo 1's development. But I mean, the majority of the game was worked on in 2001, and we're in 2014 now, almost 13 years after the game was released. So probably about 14-year-old engine, I would say.
It's pretty old.
Yeah.
What's kind of one of the things that keeps you guys making custom content for Halo Custom Edition when it is a game that's so old and there's kind of a small user community compared to what people play with Halo 3 and Halo 4 and Halo Reach on the Xbox? What's that kind of spark that keeps you guys innovating, keeps you guys making maps, and ultimately keeps you coming back to making new stuff?
Well, we had actually taken a break for a while, but I think our population for CE is a lot larger than people would expect. It's a game people like to come back to. It's very popular based on the server numbers. Right now, I've been seeing around 2,000, 3,000 people playing online at a time. I think it's very hard to gauge just how popular the game is, especially since the community, the actual community that people participate in on the forums, is pretty much shrunk to one website. But you look on YouTube and there's still a lot of people talking about it, asking about it. So I think the population is still pretty large. I would say what keeps us coming back is that every time we think we've hit the end of the road and there's no more possibilities, something else comes up and we have new ideas. For example, when we did SPV1, it was really an 8-month type thing, started in fall of 2005. And released June 25th, 2006. And that was really just simple stuff. We were really, for the first time, able to start to edit the campaign. Before that, everything was multiplayer focused. It was only around then that single player modding became a possibility. And then later with SPV2, we had the ability to look at the original scripts that make up the levels and start to edit that. And from there, we were able to learn a lot more about how things were done. And then with SPV3, we were actually able to add onto the engine and add new functions and new graphic capabilities to the game. So it's taken us pretty far, but also gives us a ton of new stuff. I could talk about it for a while and stumble over myself. But stuff you see, like our armor upgrade system, vehicle health systems, vehicle boarding, weapon behaviors that switch based on the zoom mode, none of that was possible with the original game. Never mind the graphic fidelity we're able to get now.
Right, and you're talking about a game that used to be played on the Xbox at 640 by 480.
Yeah.
480p on the console. And then you're taking a game and making it capable of running at 4K on a computer, which is just mind-boggling. I mean, we're talking now about the Master Chief Collection having 1080p 60 frames per second. And here you are working on the very first game that came out with a dev kit that Gearbox put together. And you're running this on a 4K system at 60 frames per second.
Gearbox didn't put the editing kit together. They definitely went in and they made sure it was a little bit friendlier for people. But for the most But for the most part, it's actually all the tools that Bungie used to create the game. We're using the same tools that Bungie did, plus then some.
But it's mind-boggling to think about that when. On the console, we're just now getting to 1080p, 60 frames a second.
Yeah, I mean, PCs, you always have... some people will have some crazy hardware, and some people have some not-so-great hardware. We try to make sure everything's playable for everyone. But yeah, I use a Retina MacBook Pro, and I think a max res I've run CE at, not very well, but is 3, 4 or something by something. But Yeah, you can definitely hook it up to a 4K display. We've had one person do it, and our whole HUD's been redesigned to support it as well. Some UI elements have to remain designed for 480 by 640, but
yeah, even as I saw,
as bad as you think, yeah, our loadouts, for example, suffer from that, which is kind of disappointing. But
yeah, it's kind of hard to look at some of those things. It's like everything else looks so pretty, but then you have these few other things over here that's just like, oh, why can't they fix that?
It's pretty much limited to UI elements. So luckily, people are blowing through those as fast as they can to play anyway. So minus the HUD, the HUD supports 4K, and it's like gorgeous.
It looks very pretty, guys. I got to play the heck out of it at PAX Prime. So I want to say I probably put, what, maybe a good 12 hours into it?
I did take a nap during part of it. So,
well, it was your last day there.
Yeah.
But so talk about some of the additions that you've made to it. I know for some of the past versions of the single player, you've added things as they've come up in new games. Like there's a Spartan laser that you've added in there, and as well as the Spiker, kind of like making your own models of them. So talk about how you kind of go about adding new things in there once you see other games implement new stuff.
All right, well, I should probably start with SPV1, so let's all turn the clocks back before Halo 3 was even announced, actually. Back when we were out to, like, maybe one book every 2 or 3 years, we started that project, like I said, fall 2005. And at first, it was like, well, we can recompile the maps, let's upgrade the textures, let's give it a Halo 2 HUD. And then it was like, well, what if we do a battle rifle? And then someone had mocked together a battle rifle with a grenade launcher. It's like, well, how can we make this work? And it kind of went from there. It's like, we can do all the vehicles destroyable too. I mean, that was kind of just like a quick and fun project. Nowhere near the amount of thought that goes into stuff today. But back then it was like, what are things from Halo 2 that would be cool in Halo 1? What things from concept art look cool? What things from the Halo 1 betas and the early third-person games would be cool to have? What would it be like if we could integrate the assault rifle alongside the battle rifle and the SMG? Then there was things that were people were expecting in Halo 2 that were never there, like the dropships exploding. So we had an anti-air rocket launcher that could take down the Spirit dropships before the Spirits even had names, actually. They were just known to everyone as Covenant dropships back then. So there we started with, like, what things would be cool, what things would be unique, what things haven't people seen, what do people want to see, and people liked. And then it was like, how do you put a twist on areas that you know? Like you were saying, the hunters that on the Pillar of Autumn, where you come out of the little maintenance stores and all of a sudden there's a hunter swinging at you. And then funny enough in that, there was a glitch where you could actually pick up the hunter weapons, and that eventually became a feature for SPV2. In SPV2, we expanded on those ideas. We had Halo 3 Halo 3 was out, so we drew some inspiration from there. We got the Brutes. We had them in, but not really ever playing well. We had some stuff from Halo Wars, like the Sparrowhawk in there. SPV2, I should clarify, was never released. We ended up canceling it and going away for a while. And then when it came to SPV3, a lot of things had changed, really. I mean, Reach was out. ODST was out. We already knew Halo 4 was coming. Anniversary was expected. So with that, the idea was, what are things that can really play well? Like, how can we deliver an experience that isn't more difficult, doesn't have so many gimmicky features that it just becomes a run-through of, let me pick this up and try this and do this. And mindless fun. How do we create a thing where people are going to have to go through and, you know, master weapons, have a learning curve for things? It's another thing that's kind of hard to remember, but I guess it really starts with Halo 2. Halo 1 Legendary was probably Halo 1 at its best. That's when every little aspect of its gameplay came out. And then with Halo 2, it became almost like a torture test. How well can you plasma pistol and BR and elite? How well can you memorize enemy locations?
Cairo stations.
In Halo 2's Legendary runs, I think most people would agree, is pretty grinding and not the most fun experience. It's more of a process of exploiting things in the game rather than having a fun time and experimenting and doing things different ways. And Halo 3 fixed a lot of that. Halo 3's Legendary was a lot better. I think some people would go back and forth on Reach, whether that Legendary was something where you could experiment as you played or had to follow a very set plan. So our goal is to have it like Halo 1, where you can go through it multiple times, try different weapons, try different things, and not have a grinding, difficult experience, but have something doable where you can enjoy yourself as you go through it. And then for people who want something like Halo 2, where it's very intense, very low margin of error, we have a new Noble difficulty, which replaces Easy. So we cover both our bases with that.
Cool. I don't know if you want to talk about that a little later, but before we do, one of the things that is really kind of interesting with what you've done with the redo of the SPV3, and it just goes to show how much time and effort you guys are really putting into this, is just all the updated textures with it, and just the weapons, the character models, even the environment stuff. It just looks incredible, and you guys have done a really good job at really keeping the feel of Halo in there while updating a lot of the textures to be higher resolution, to be more rich, and still keeping that foreigner theme going. So what's kind of been the art perspective and the art direction you guys have taken, and talk a little bit about the art team behind SPV3.
Oh, we've been around for so long. We've gone through several artists, some people who are still contributing, some people who have gone on to do different things. We're all still very friendly with everyone. Just, you know, real life intervenes. Well, for one thing, our geometry and textures, they have to fit. There's a lot of technical art terms, but basically every texture, we can either up its resolution and add more detail or redo it, but it has to fit the same overall, how do I put the simple terms? The new textures have to occupy the same space that the old ones did. So for stuff like the Forerunner, more of how do we make it look more detailed and more layered? You know, levels of grime and shine that would look natural. And sometimes it's a huge pain because Halo 1 was so thrown together. Not that, the game was developed in pretty much 1 year. Things were done together pretty haphazardly, and sometimes you can see stuff that you shouldn't as far as the way the textures are laid into the geometry. But for the most part, we take everything on a case-by-case basis. Some stuff like Silent Cartographer, there's a lot of scenery involved to put beach stones on the rocks that look like they're slick with water. The Mission Halo, a lot of that is atmosphere and just trying to get a very large grass texture that we can have a lot of detail in. Pillar of Autumn, all those textures were redone in high resolution. And we also try to always do a new theme for a map as well. Sometimes it gets a little bit touchy because how do you do it without ruining the mood and feel of the original?
Right.
Pillar of Autumn is very gray and drab now. And I like to think that it almost feels like an iron tomb that you're trying to fight your way out of. And in some ways, I think that's good. It makes the colors pop, especially on the elites. We try to keep a lot of color involved. One thing that a lot of games do these days is they go for a very drab color scheme. We make it a focus to make sure color still pops. So I think that works in Pillar of Autumn. Some people want to see it more colorful. We're never really sure. Everything's always changing. It could change by release. And then for Halo, we've gone with almost a misty feeling when you come out of the life pod. Instead of it just being clear skies and sunshine streaming everywhere, you know, it feels like you've explored like this humid environment with fog and there's mountains in the distance. Truth and Reconciliation is no longer a desert. It's a blizzard that you get to navigate through, which I think is really awesome. It's really cool to be looking through all this snow and fog in the night and seeing all the Covenant torches lighting up the area and just firing off silenced weapons at the elites. And then Assault Against Rome was just snow. We had some cool ideas of having it start as like a summery environment and then transitioning over into a snowy, wintry one. But that never really panned out. And also the ice is too much fun for the warthogs. So,
like as you went through the level, you would change?
Yeah, we ended up just sticking with snow. I really like the ice. The ice is something that only Halo 1 had. It's on Sidewinder and for the PC level Ice Fields, which will be in the Master Chief Collection. And then it's in Assault in the Control Room and Two Betrayals, but in Two Betrayals, it's rare that you use the Warthog since it's only something you'll use really for co-op.
Mm-hmm.
So Assault and Control Room is really the only level where you get to use the Warthog with Marines and have like ice and snow and have to avoid the Wraith shots while you're skidding across the ice. So it just made more sense to leave that as snow.
Got it. You mentioned something that we haven't quite touched on yet, which I want to dive into. And you mentioned silenced weapons for the Truth and Reconciliation. So you guys have added a bunch of weapons into SPV3, some that are iconic to the Halo franchise, like the silenced SMG and the DMR and the BR, but then some of your new creations. So why don't you kind of go over some of the weapons that you've added from other Halo games and then transition into some of the new weapons that you guys have been working on and experimenting with?
All right. Well, I guess I should start with, I'll start with the human weapons. So
yeah, go for it.
We have the 32-round assault rifle, which is cool. We made some changes to that. We also, we're big Halo fans or we wouldn't be doing this. We also make it a point to give all the weapons their proper identifiers. I would imagine most people listening to the podcast know, you know, in Halo 1, it's the MA5V with the 60-round clip. In Halo 3, it's the MA5C. In Halo 4, it's the MA5D. And then in Halo Reach, it's the MA37. Or maybe I'm forgetting a letter in there. I don't know.
Yeah, they all have their serial numbers.
Yeah, assault rifle, despite being 32 rounds, we call it the MA5E. And it's got a much slower rate at fire at first, which I really like, because you'll start off a firefight and you'll be firing slow, deliberate bursts at the enemy. And then if somebody gets in your face and you hold it down, it'll accelerate and then you'll be like mowing them down. But it also has a digital zoom.
So it's more like the Halo 3 assault rifle.
A little bit. I wouldn't really classify it as being like any of them, really. It's its own thing. And it has has a digital scope that replaces the flashlight, which calls back to ODST a bit. Because ODST's SMG had a smaller clip in the zoom and was more accurate. So our assault rifle is almost a combination of the, I would say, the Reach assault rifle and the silenced SMG from ODST. And then we have what we call the BR-45 battle rifle down from the M55. And one thing we did, which I really love, is using open source, we've been able to re-enable Bungie's single shot when zoom for the battle rifle. This is another thing people don't often remember, that the battle rifle wasn't going to be three-shot burst when zoomed in. That was a change that came in the last 6 months of the game. Originally, they want to be three-round burst when you're firing unzoomed and single shots that are one-third the strength of a burst when zoomed. So we have that enabled by default, but you can also switch to firing mode. So if you like using the single shot when zoomed, like Bungie originally intended, you can use that. If you like the three-round burst that you've had in 2, 3, and 4, you can use that as well. And on top of that, we have two variations of the battle rifle. One which is silenced, and the other which has a grenade launcher attached to the bottom, which we give you as a loadout option for several missions.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, and then we have the DMR, which, unlike Halo 4, we're not trying to make it compete with the battle rifle. It's really a miniature sniper rifle. You can use it like you would use in the same situations you use the BR and the pistol, but it's not ideal. The auto-aim values are designed for long range. The bullet speed is designed for long range. It doesn't have the burst. So it's going to be interesting to see how people go ahead and use these different weapons.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking at my list here. We have the flamethrower, of course. That was enabled in Halo PC before it was ever in Halo 3. So we've always had that in our mod. We have the frag grenades, we have the pistol, the rocket launcher, the shotgun. Then we have the SMG, which is the Halo 1 assault rifle, pretty much. We didn't really change too much with it. It has the recoil, it's a little bit more accurate. But you still, if you're a fan of the Halo 1 assault rifle and you're sad to see that there's a 32 one, you can pretty much get an identical gun to what you used to use in 2001 through the SMG. And that comes in a silence and non-silence variant. Same with the sniper rifle. The sniper rifle has a silence and non-silence variant. And that's it for the human weapons. So the human weapons, we've done a lot of variations, but nothing really new or unique. When you get to the Covenant, you have the gravity grenade, which is really fun. That thing can suck things in and throw them around. I think that's going to be a favorite of people. We have the Brute Shot, our new cluster grenades, the Focus Rifle, the Needler, and the Plasma Rifle, all returning from other games. And then we have the plasma pistol, of course, and we have a new variation on that for the Brutes, which is an older version of the plasma pistol. In our mod, we have our own alternate cannon, which fits in pretty well with everything that Bungie did. But we have this idea that the Brutes don't really carry their own technology. They carry the hand-me-down weapons that the elites no longer want. So it's like in Vietnam, if some soldiers were given like World War II weapons. So the Brute plasma pistol fires 3 shots at once and can light targets on fire. We also have a next-generation carbine, which we call a particle carbine, which is a fusion of the beam rifle and the carbine. We've tried to get rid of Covenant weapons that use ammunition, unless they're Needler tech, to go back to the original game. We also have the Jackal Shield for the first time in a Halo game, which you can use to deflect projectiles and hide behind when you recharge your shield.
You can actually use it. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting weapon because some people took it, some people even internally, and it is somewhat of a gimmick. But it's interesting to give the player a tool and see how they're going to use it. It's kind of funny if you look at Halo 3. They put the radar jammer and the... What was the other one? The radar jammer and the flare?
And the energy drain?
No, the flare. And they had them in matchmaking for a total of like 2 months until people started using them as tools to get out of the levels and for things they weren't supposed to.
Mm.
So it's interesting to see how people are going to use it. I've seen our testers use it in very interesting ways. Some people take it out and deflect grenades, which is pretty funny, when a plasma grenade comes flying at their face. Other people will use it when the hunters charge their beams to absorb the beam and then switch to their weapon and then go dodge them. So I've seen people deflect enemy sniper rounds. It's pretty neat how people have used it. On the talk of hunter weapons, we also have those usable to the player. It appears those were actually going to be usable in Halo 4 as support weapons, but we don't have support weapons, so they're just normal first-person weapons with low ammo counts that you can pick up and use for a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the focus rifle. Did I say that one already? I'm made of.
No, I don't think you have yet.
Yeah, we have a new variation of the focus rifle, which does not play much like the Reach one, other than being like a solid beam, which I think will be interesting for people because the weapon has such a bad reputation from Reach.
Yeah,
that pretty much covers everything we've announced so far for... the first half of the game. There's a few other things that are going to be appearing in it that we're not ready to announce yet, but yeah, that's everything that we have.
You mentioned that you had a couple new grenade types. The gravity one was pretty interesting. How did you get that one to work in the confines of the Halo engine?
That actually was something that was enabled by OS. We made some changes to the way it's able to deal with what's called instantaneous acceleration, which is what you would think of as force when a grenade goes off and how it propels bodies and everything. So we can give that a negative value now, so it can suck things in. And when I say it sucks things in, like, anything that you've ever seen move from an explosion in Halo can be affected by this. So it'll suck in weapons, grenades on the ground, bipeds, vehicles. I'm forgetting something.
Boxes, crates. Well,
we don't have... If this was Halo 2 and later where they have actual usable crates, then that would work, but we don't have that, unfortunately. The only thing, I'm forgetting one thing. Did I say weapons? Weapons, grenades?
I think you did, yeah.
Yeah, I think you did.
Vehicles, bipeds. So, yeah, that's what, it can suck up all of that.
Pretty interesting. Lots of cool things. What are you guys doing for the music in here? I'm assuming you're just kind of keeping a lot of the original stuff, or are you looking at remastering some of your own stuff in there?
Yeah, we're sticking to pretty much for the entire game, the original soundtrack. For some of our new areas, because we have extended levels, we reuse some Halo 1 music. There's some publicly released Halo 1 music that was never put into the game that we're using, or plan to use, rather. And then occasionally we take music from the other games, but none of that's final, and we're always looking ways to have as much custom content as we can. Sound is the only thing where sometimes we teeter back and forth on. But yeah, all the music is very much Halo-based, no Breaking Benjamin or anything of the sort, no Blow Me Away.
That one's still an awesome song, though.
Yeah, it's an awesome song. People seem to respond weirdly to non-Halo music in a Halo game. The Marty's music and Michael's music is just so iconic. You can't really get away with putting somebody else's music in there.
Blow Me Away was in Halo 2. The song was there.
Yeah, I mean, people just seem to be very mixed about having other music, so we just want to stick to Marty's music.
Right. No, I get it. And it's one of those things that it's hard to introduce new music in there, especially since I know for me, I didn't think, I mean, no discredit to him, but I don't think Neil Davidge's music really lived up to the Halo legacy for music. So I'd imagine it'd be pretty hard to match the same kind of emotions and feelings that Marty put into Halo 1 when he made the soundtrack for that.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy Halo 4's music. It's definitely very different, though, and the way they approach music that is very different than the way Marty did it. So,
right.
There's a lot of artistic... Halo 4 gets a lot of flack for changes in artistic direction, but it's also a different team of artists, so
You
can't really expect them to just spend their days imitating somebody else's art. They have to put their own spin, their own twist, and their own vision into it. And some of it comes out really cool, like the Chief. And I really like the Jackals. I know a lot of people don't like the Jackals in Halo 4. And then some things really alienates people, like the Forerunner geometry and the shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different team. It's a different team of people, so you can only expect them to do their own thing.
What's kind of been the one big change that you guys have made to the campaign that you think would be the most controversial for like faithful Halo players if they want to come and play this? Something that you guys are kind of testing the waters on, but might not be as well received, but you're taking the chance on it anyways.
That's a tough question, because so many people look at the campaigns and have different things they like in it. See, I started playing Halo on Xbox before Halo 2 came out. So for me, what I loved was more than anything was being able to go through these missions like 10 times, all doing different things, where you take a Warthog on assault in the control room, or never pick up a sniper or a rocket launcher and do it all on foot, or tell yourself you're not going to use any Covenant weapons. So for me, I love having all these options with the gameplay and being able to go through these missions and selecting different guns and trying different things and finding new ways to all these encounter puzzles. Some people really like that Halo 1 only had about 5 main weapons you could always use. And for them, what I really like might really alienate them. Other people may take offense to that we've pretty much overhauled the original story, whether it be with bonus sections and new areas, or including things like brutes and skirmishers into the mix. Some people might feel that we've ruined the original atmosphere, changing the environments up. But my feeling is, if you're coming to play this, you're coming to play it because you, first of all, you like Halo 1 and you like Halo. And if you enjoy playing those, I think there's going to be something that everybody will find that they like. And like every real game, I'm sure there's going to be things that people find that they don't like either, or think should have been done differently. But that's the great thing about Custom Edition. If you don't like what you're seeing, everything's open source. You can just take it and put your own twist on it or make your own edits.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of people will really enjoy this just because there is a lot that's going into the game. And just from the amount that I've played for it, it was a lot of fun to play. I mean, I already said I played probably 10 to 12 hours while I was at PAX. So it's definitely one of those things that I think will be pretty amazing, and you've already gotten a lot of press for it, so people are definitely interested, even though we're getting the Master Chief Collection. And that's kind of a question I'll pose here in a little bit. But there is some other things that I think might be a little controversial as well. I mean, you mentioned that you introduced kind of like the brutes into the game, which wasn't in Halo 1, and you talked about changing environments, but loadouts is something that you've implemented in there as well, where you can actually choose those at the beginning of a mission and really kind of customize your experience, which is always something that I thought about whenever you start a campaign. It's like, you know kind of a battle you're going into, or you think you kind of know about going into, so you want to be able to choose the weapons that you want to use for that mission. So I think it's a very interesting addition to have loadouts in there, but it could be kind of controversial as well. So what kind of made you think about doing loadouts for the campaign?
Yeah, well, also I should put on that note also our take on armor abilities, armor upgrades are sure to
that too
create some debates. I think it was on Joystick or Kotaku when we posted the trailer, people were talking about the loadouts because Reach has such a bad rap from a lot of people, and I would say most people would agree out of Bungie's games. It certainly has its fair share of issues. as I was saying earlier, my big thing with Halo 1 that I loved was being able to go through these missions in different ways. So if you ask yourself, well, what if you had to do Truth and Reconciliation, but you didn't have a sniper rifle? What if you had a silenced battle rifle instead? What if you had weapons that all were very loud, but you had a grenade launcher on the bottom that you could use to take out all those turrets? And you could time your shots to take out those turrets. Or, per se, so in the control room, in the original game, you start with a pistol and an assault rifle. What if you went in with a silenced battle rifle and a silenced SMG, and you got to use those for all the stealth sections on that map? Funny enough, despite being called Assault in the Control Room, that one mission probably has more stealth sections than the entire any other level in the series. So, I mean, the loadouts, if you don't like them, you can always choose the equivalent of the original game's starting weapons and just ignore them. Same thing with the armor abilities for the most part. If you don't like the armor abilities, you can always use Flashlight. But if you're someone who wants to experiment with something such as Sprint, or you really like the regenerative health from Halo 2 and onwards, you can have that. That's actually another one that'll probably be pretty controversial, since Halo 1's health system was so unique in the fact that you could be wounded and have to go on to the next encounter. I like having the Halo 2 health system option, just because if you're someone who likes to have a lot of close quarters fights on Legendary, which I love having with the assault rifle and the SMG, it's not very fun when you get done through one encounter and you take a stray needle or two in your side and all of a sudden you're down to yellow or red health and you have to go through three or four more encounters where a single plasma rifle bolt will shatter your shield and shatter your health and kill you. So,
right.
Yeah. But I mean, I think for people who don't want to use the armor abilities, you can always choose the visor, which is the equivalent of the flashlight, just a lot prettier. And I think people will be fine with that. So what's great is that if you don't like something, you can choose not to use it. It's just like Halo 1. I found the plasma rifle and the plasma pistol made things too uninteresting in the campaign. I like to go through Halo 1's campaign with an assault rifle and a pistol and pretty much stick to that for the whole thing, unless it's a flood mission where I'll choose the shotgun. So the whole thing's really been designed for people to play multiple times over. I'd like to think people will start with Heroic and work their way through. And that's what most people at PAX did. They played with Heroic, and for the most part, people felt outside the new twist, which they haven't adapted to yet, and learning things about the weapons that they had always known about Halo 1 or Halo 2 or Halo 3. Once they got a hold of those things, they said, it feels like I'm playing Heroic on Halo 1. When I'm done with this, I'd love to go to Legendary. And if you're beat Legendary, you always have the new Noble difficulty. So that's great. And on any of those difficulties, if you find one is too hard or you're not that great a Halo player, you can always go through them multiple times, try new weapons, try new things. So I think once we release, if we do our job right, people will play through each mission about 4 or 5 times, which I think is really good, considering each mission is over about an hour long, give or take, hour and a half, maybe.
Wow.
Well, it really varies mission for mission. Pillar of Autumn, I can do in 40 minutes. Halo, I can do in about an hour and 20.
Gosh, that's a long time.
That is a long time.
Well, I can actually probably do it shorter. I often, that has several new areas in the middle of it. So oftentimes when I play, I'm always minimizing and looking at stuff and making changes as I go along. But I would say it's probably about an extra 20 to 30 minutes on top of what you're used to playing for the mission Halo. Truth and Reconciliation has no new areas. Assault and Control Room has 2 new areas, which are still in development, so I can't really give a good frame on that.
Mm-hmm.
And the second half of the game, we're just not talking about yet. Although I will say I've been playing Library recently, and with the inclusion of more ways to fight the Flood, such as incinerating them with a Brute Plasma Pistol or the Brute Shot or the Shotgun, and having stuff like Health Regen or our Reflex Booster armor upgrade. There's no armor abilities. They're all armor upgrades. It's actually a lot more fun, and that's always been my least favorite mission. So,
got it. You've mentioned when I was at PAX that a lot of the additions that you've made, you've tried to put some kind of lore or like backstory fill in it. Is there anything that kind of stands out from the stuff that you've added that you feel that is kind of shaky kind of in the Halo realm, or do you think that you've filled pretty much a lot of the gaps when it comes to making everything fit in?
I would say for the most part, I mean, communicating it in-game is different than having a forum post or a readme that's the equivalent of the game guidebook.
Well, I think if a lot of people are really interested to know more about what's going on, you go look it up, because it definitely, you don't get everything just by playing the game, but you go in and see what's going on from a wiki or a book that you will, that is released on the game or whatever. So, but even from that point, there's still a lot of things that when I was playing, it's like, I can maybe see where this fits in, but maybe not quite so much, just because it is something that's very different to the Halo franchise. Like, for example, the plasma pistol that sets stuff on fire. It's like, the Covenant's a lot more into the plasma technology than the flaming technology. So that's one of those things that's like, that doesn't fit as well with me in the universe.
I mean, it's certainly a valid point. I mean, the idea behind that is, like I was saying earlier, the Broods get the hand-me-down weapons. So things like the Brute Plasma Pistol, it's from a time when they couldn't really contain plasma as well, when they had this big lob of it gathering at the end of their guns, but it just kind of incinerated and lit on fire everything. It wasn't as directed as the current one is, the green one, that you've seen the Grunts and Elites use, mm-hmm. which is a lot more damaging when it hits something, and, you know, shielding, and it, you know, you hit someone with that, you know, they reel from it, they burn for a bit. If you look at the actual lore, like, an overcharge shot will boil anything away or take off somebody's head. So it's kind of like, it's a cruder version of it that hasn't been kept in the right state of repair. So we have stuff like that. I mean, people have to judge for themselves if they buy that as a explanation for why things do things. But the first and foremost thing is gameplay first for us. You know, does this offer something interesting to the right enemies? And is it available to the player enough that it'll be a fun thing for them to use?
Has there been any thoughts about remaking some of the newer game maps? I know from an asset perspective, it's probably not as easy to get on a hold of stuff like Halo 2 and 3, but have you guys ever toyed with the idea that if you could possibly remake one of the Halo 2 maps, would you do it in Halo CE, or what is the fact that it's kind of, or parts of it already there in Halo 2 Vista, would it's like not worth it at this point? Or are the limitations of the game engine just not, don't allow you to do some of the new stuff?
There's a couple of ways to respond to that. One is that we have a game where we can create anything we want in it. So I think most of us would rather spend our efforts on doing something new and unique rather than repeating something that's been done before.
Even though you're completely remaking the campaign?
Well, I mean, we've taken the original campaign, but we put our own twist on it. That's
right.
A bit different than going through and trying to replicate another game in the levels. The later games, also, the geometry and the ways that they're able to put it all together is very different than Halo 1. There's a huge jump from Halo 1 to Halo 2 internally on how they handle the level geometry. And from 2 to 3 to 4, the jump is nowhere near as significant. Mm-hmm. So that's a challenge there in itself. And the other thing is, if people want to play Halo 2, you know, you can get Halo 2 Vista. You can get, you can play it on the original Xbox. You can play it on 360. You can play it on Xbox One soon. So,
it'll be nice.
I think most of us would say we'd rather do something creative than imitative. And while we have a lot of things that imitate later games in our project, we're also trying to make more efforts to do more custom and unique things. We got some stuff we're not ready to announce yet, but there are weapons that haven't been seen in any Halo game, or they're a combination of ideas from later games that that give their own little twist. So,
got it. Is there anything from the loadouts, the armor abilities that you want to talk to? Did you list them all out before, or did you just kind of mention a few? Because I know there's a laundry list of them that you add in there. So can you quickly go over some of the quickly go over all of them?
All right, well, all the ones we've announced I can go over. We call them armor upgrades because not all of them are really abilities, I would say. One thing I did not like about Reach, and I think most people would agree when they think of it this way, and Halo 4 actually did a good job avoiding this, is there's a lot of times where you have a period where you activate it, and then it cools down, you wait for it to recharge, and then you go at it again. It's a cycle of repeating. So most of our stuff, we try to keep the player always moving and never sitting around the one spot waiting for the armor ability to recharge so they can use it again.
Got it.
So we have one thing called the reflex booster, which actually violates everything I just said. That has a slight cooldown. But when you go into it, all the enemies slow down and all the bullets slow down, but you work at the normal speed. So that's really fun. At times, it lasts for about 3 to 4 seconds. And it gives you that brief time when you can avoid the plasma bolts or fire off that last sniper round at the guy charging at you before he kills you.
So it's like a slow-mo version?
Kind of. It's like almost like bullet time.
Yeah, from time. Yeah, I was thinking Time Crisis.
Yeah, well, actually, that's funny. The way we have it working is Bungie actually had a power-up in the original game called Double Speed, which was later disabled. It doesn't work for multiplayer. I don't think there's any way you could ever get it to, since it slows everything down for everyone.
Right. You can't really do that for lifetime data.
Right. But in the campaign, it works fine. So we've adapted that into the armor ability. We also have something that we call the Shield EMP, which we thought was really cool and unique, and then Halo Spartan Assault came out, and they had that too. So, copycats.
That
lets you detonate your shield. They just beat us to it. We should have announced it earlier.
Dope.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the destroyable dropships. We did it first. The idea obviously wasn't ours, but we had it, and now it's kind of looked at, oh, it's just like a Halo 2 feature, Halo 3 feature.
Mm-hmm.
But the shield EMP lets you sacrifice your own shield to take out other shields and vehicles around you, and also flood infection forms at the cost of your own shield. So it's like a double-edged sword if you want to use it or not,
right?
Which I really like. You have to think tactically about how you're going to use it. You can't just, you know, detonate it and wait for it to recharge and do it again. There's a consequence for using it. We have active camo, which I really like also because we don't do what Reach and 4 did, where you go into it and you have to move very slow, otherwise people are going to see you. We're only dealing with the single player aspect of the game. So okay. We just have you go into full camo. You have about 10 to 15 seconds to navigate and do what you want, and then you have about a 30 to 45 second recharge on it. So by that time, the encounter is over. Also, Halo 1 AI, they have different states of awareness. So once they know you're there and you go into camo again, when they're already actively hunting for you, they'll mm-hmm. notice you a lot more easily. And you just can't go into it time over time and go in and assassinate them. We have visor, which replaces flashlight. That one's pretty self-explanatory.
Is that basically like the ODST visor mode?
Yeah, ODST visor mode. Pretty similar to Reach's night vision. And
okay.
Then we also have our two passive armor upgrades, which are health regen, which brings you to the Halo 2, Halo 3, Halo 4 health system. With some slight modifications. It only brings you up to your yellow health. Doesn't bring you all the way back to blue, so health packs still are important when you see them.
Mm-hmm.
And then radar makes it so everything in range on your motion tracker always shows up, regardless if it's moving or not. So that's pretty fun for stealth missions, because you can see where people are on your radar or motion tracker and know exactly where they're going, how they're moving, if they're standing still. So that's nice.
You guys kind of do a lot of everything with customization. You do custom weapon models, you do custom biped models, you do the level design. You even do like complete ground-up level design with the multiplayer maps. So,
yeah, it sounds like you guys are busy.
Yeah. Yeah, multiplayer is a cool thing that... It's crazy. People are still playing our last release, which is CMT Snowgrove. And I just pulled up the information out online. That came out in April of 07, and it's had 147,000 downloads on one website alone. And there's still servers that play it 24/7 to this day, which is pretty crazy. And it's funny because, like I was saying, you never know if people are going to react with the tools that you give them. We actually had an early version of the Spiker in there, even before the Halo 3 beta was out. Just our best guess of what it was going to behave like and what we could see from Vidocs, like the Etu Brute Vidoc and some other information we got a hold of. And we had a Spiker in there, and you could stab people with it. So people decided to make a zombie game type out of it. And it's all, you know, gentlemen's agreements for the rules. And people, there's like, y'all, one day I look online, it's like 24/7 zombies on CMT Snowgrove. And I'm like, what? But zombies.
I go zombies.
The server and they're like, this is how you play it. I'm like, all right.
Sounds fun.
Well, with the net code for Halo, unfortunately, the net code for Halo 1 is so It's hard to say terrible because it had to be designed with 56K modems in mind, but it has not aged well at all. I'll put that. There's a lot of server apps that help fix problems with it, and it's gotten a lot better than it used to be. But compared to even like Halo 2 or Halo 3, it can be pretty frustrating to play on. But the demand for more multiplayer from us is there, so you never know.
Yeah. Is there something that you guys have been wanting to work on, like after you're done with CMT SPV3, or is this kind of like?
I hope.
Is this kind of like the only project that you guys are really focused on right now?
It's really the only thing we're focused on. I have ideas for things I'd like to do after, but I think more than anything, we'd all like to get a new Halo game with a full editing kit. You know, see a whole new community form and really start from the beginning again with a new game. This game's lasted us a bit over 10 years now. It'd be nice to have something a little bit more modern, especially now that we seem to be hitting every wall that we can.
Yeah. Would you guys branch off into Halo 2 Vista for creating custom content, or are you guys just sticking with Halo 1 until maybe the next PC mod or PC game for Halo with a custom kit comes out?
Well, even if a custom kit didn't come out, it would be interesting to see what they do. But Halo 2 Vista's port was just... I don't know the full story behind it, and if I did, I wouldn't be able to say it publicly either. Because whatever I learned would probably put people's jobs in jeopardy. But
okay.
There was a lot of stuff that went on with it that people working on it weren't very happy with the direction that they were being told they had to go. And it shows in the final product. So all the stuff with Games for Windows Live really botched a lot of things and trying to build a reputation for the game and an expectation for people who load up custom maps really led to a lot of decisions, which from a business standpoint, I guess, are good. But the game has not had anywhere near the community that Custom Edition has. So Halo 2 Vista, just it's impossible to work with if you're serious about creating anything more than just a multiplayer map.
That's kind of unfortunate because they really tried to go, or it seemed like they tried to make a custom edition way for Halo 2 Vista because they did realize that the custom making community for Halo CE was that drastic, but I guess they just didn't deliver, just like how they made the requirement to have it played on Vista instead of XP.
Yeah, I don't think the people who worked on Halo 2 Vista I think whatever ideas they had at first, they soon began to realize that they weren't going to be able to do what they thought people would like. It's a complicated, and I don't really want to say too much because I don't want anyone getting any flack for it, even if they'd have told me nothing. So I just would rather not go too much into it. But hopefully they realized that, you know, people still want to buy Halo Custom Edition, which is pretty crazy. 13 years later, people still want to get it. And I guess you can get it off Amazon, I think people were saying. But then again, that also depends on what country you're in and what the stock is. So it'd be nice to have it even on Steam where people could just, make a, $10, $15, $20 purchase and get the whole game to play online. But I'm sure Microsoft regrets the way Halo 2 Vista went down because if they had two games that they could keep on selling instead of one game which they're not selling, or if Halo 2 Vista even had the legs that Custom Edition did, there's no doubt in my mind people would still be buying it. Especially given how long it's been to get to even buy Halo 2, it's been a while since you could even bought a new copy of Halo 2. Mm-hmm. Everyone has to buy it used. It's funny, on the Xbox Marketplace, you can buy the original Combat Evolved as an Xbox original game, but not Halo 2.
I think it was because for a while, you could still play Halo 2 on Xbox Live. There was still that capability, and it just got taken away a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, you can't buy it as an Xbox original. Funny thing about that, if you ever look at Halo 1 on the 360 Marketplace, like 90% of the pictures are from, like, really, really early builds of Halo 1 with like totally different skies and totally different shaders and models and everything. So it's kind of funny. You should tell Microsoft that I bought the game, but it doesn't look anything like the pictures they showed.
You mean Bungie?
They should give me the one in the pictures. I'd love to have that.
Too funny. Well, you could probably make it.
Oh, we could, but it'd be very interesting to see an early build of Halo 1.
Right. But. Yeah. So, with when Halo's CE anniversary first came out, you guys were working on, I guess, at the time, were you working on SPV2?
Actually, we had just started work on SPV3.
Oh, okay. So, how was that? How did you guys take that for them basically going and kind of doing what you did, except they're staying more true to the original game? Do you guys have any lessons that you took back from what they did with it? Did you guys feel a little awkward about it because they did come out with a remake while you guys have been working on remakes for the past 7 years? Or what was the response of that?
Honestly, I can't even remember what the response was. I don't think many of us were too worried about it. First of all, we target two different audiences. People who want the classic experience get that. And also, it is prettier looking than what we have, but it also gives us more freedom in a way to do what we want to do. Because if people want to play Halo 1 with upgraded graphics, it's like, hey, go over there for $40. You know, you can go play it. You know, if you want something new and interesting and you want to see a lot of new content, you know, come play us. So, I work on the project every day, and I still play Halo CE Anniversary a fair amount, too. I like to keep myself in tune with all the games and make sure I'm not favoring one or the other. I'm not replicating a mistake that what I view as a mistake in the gameplay of one game to another. And also just trying to keep a certain consistency in the difficulty of the game. So it actually helps. And I mean, even with our trailer we released, there were so many comparisons to, this is what I wanted from Halo CE Anniversary, or this may not look as pretty as it, but this is still really good looking. And so, like, see, this is why they should release Halo CE Anniversary on the PC. So in the end, I think it actually has benefited us. And I think it also is nice that we're releasing it, or planning to release around the same time as the Master Chief Collection. We can kind of ride that nostalgia wave while not, quote-unquote, competing with them.
Right, because you're dealing in a market that's 13 years old or something like that.
Well, I think we're actually going to have a lot of new people who want to download CE and play it when we do it, based on the responses we've seen since we released that trailer.
I'm sure you will, but you're still dealing with a game that is so old that Microsoft doesn't even care about the sales for that really anymore.
Right, otherwise we could probably should be pretty afraid of being shut down. But
right.
But really, honestly, I think if you love Halo, there's a reason to play us, and there's also a reason to get an Xbox One and play the Master Chief Collection.
Which can't come out soon enough.
I know, I'm really looking forward to it. I'll be playing it the night it comes out. My feeling is that if I think there's enough interesting stuff in both games, you know, other people will too. So there's no way we can really replicate the online experience of having all those multiplayer maps.
Right.
Never mind having all these other campaigns. Each game has something new and different to offer. You know, I like to think that we offer something that Master Chief Collection isn't either. And they're offering something we don't. So in the end, everyone benefits.
Right. There's one other thing as we kind of wrap up here. Biowolf, I don't know if you have any questions that you want to ask him, but something that's always been on the Xbox but never been on the PC is campaign co-op. You want to talk about the kind of complications behind that and why it's not exactly feasible for Halo Custom Edition and what you're doing with SPV3?
Well, the hope is one. Well, I guess I'll start with the netcode again. The netcode doesn't support online. There is no infrastructure in place for online co-op. And even Halo CE Anniversary, it was very laggy at times, sometimes unplayable for some people. That's probably my biggest problem with Halo CE Anniversary. I love pretty much all of it. My only two complaints are that the elite shields aren't bright enough and you don't always know when you're shooting them, and that the online netcode for the co-op can sometimes be unplayable depending on what people's connections are. So you can imagine that if they can't pull it off of the source code and broadband requirements, we can't do anything of the sort either. There's been some talk recently of people trying to re-enable split screen in the PC version of Halo and Custom Edition by extension. So far there has been leads into it, but there's still a lot of obstacles, and I don't know if it'll ever be possible. If it is, we'll definitely support it. Even if it means coming out with an SPV4 to support online split-screen co-op. Because that would just be so much fun. All the stuff we do is designed with co-op in mind, even though we don't have it. So there's support for a lot of that stuff in it right now.
Interesting. It would be cool to see that somehow come to fruition.
Yeah, I don't know.
I guess it's not something that you can have someone go and like try to reverse engineer the coding and insert it into the game as like a new network DLL or something. Is it kind of like hard code in there where you can't do that?
Yeah, it's really in there. I mean, if we had the source code, then maybe. But the thing is that the Halo Custom Edition source code was used for Halo 1 Anniversary, and now it's being used again in the Master Chief Collection. So I would highly doubt they're going to release the source code for something that's, you know, even just now releasing this year. So
yeah, that's true.
Still used in retail products. So
yeah.
Before we add this, I do want to add for anyone listening, if you've never played on the PC before, we are releasing full support for Xbox One and Xbox 360 controllers. So I prefer to play with a controller rather than a mouse and keyboard. So anyone who eventually does want to play, you can plug in a controller, configure control settings. Everything works just like Xbox, just the bumper and the trigger have to be switched for grenades and armor ability, and you get no rumble support. Other than that, it's just like playing on Xbox, as Duststorm can back me up on, because he played with the controller the whole time at PAX.
Yeah,
so I just want to add that on while we're talking about differences between Xbox and PC.
Oh, sure. And I will be changing that control scheme, by the way.
Which one were you using when you played? It was
the one that you had, where the armor upgrade was the left trigger and the right bumper was the grenades, but I would switch those.
Yeah, well, the reason why I had it configured like that is because the game is so old, it can't detect the two analogs, because they're both analog triggers. So you'd have to stop shooting your gun, throw a grenade, and start shooting your gun again.
Yeah, no,
is why we have to switch.
I've never had that problem when playing with Xbox 360 controller on Halo PC, though. So
really? That's interesting. I have to look into that.
Because whenever I'm throwing a grenade, I'm not pulling the trigger, so...
No. Wait, so you... we'll talk about it later, I guess. Technical stuff later.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm curious to hear more about that.
So it's just never really been an issue for me.
Oh, wait, so you just never had an issue with it, but you still have the bug, right?
Well, I've never noticed it, because that's not how I normally do it.
All right,
I'm not like trying to pull my gun trigger and pull a grenade at the same time. I'm either doing one or the other.
Yeah, I press both at the same time when I play on Xbox, so maybe that's why it's such a pain to me.
See, I
remember
Naked
like, Spy was like, and they didn't have an issue with that either. So when he played,
yeah, I was like, I'm either gonna fire or I'm gonna throw a grenade. I'm not gonna be doing both at the same time, because I can't do both. At least that's how I do it. So I think that's how a lot of people would play too.
Interesting. Well, that's what testing is for, and that's why it was really great to have it at PAX and see people's responses. So
yeah, Bywolf, did you have any questions for Masters?
You kind of answered, or he kind of answered when we were talking about the co-op deal. So, not that I can think of, no.
Okay. Well, thanks for giving us the rundown on everything, Masters. It's been really great to play. I got to play it a lot at PAX, and I'm really looking forward to what you're going to be coming out with in the near future. And you guys start releasing, or you plan to start releasing in November, so that'll be good to finally get hands on it.
Yeah, well, given we're still trying to get Sonic Cartographer evolved out, which is going to be really fun. I think that people are going to really enjoy that. I'll have all sorts of information on how to download that on my YouTube and Twitter, as well as how to get Halo Custom Edition and open source and everything. But that's been seeing a number of delays. So depending on how much further back it goes, we might delay SPV3 a tad, but everything's undecided right now. But we want to give some people some breather room anyway between everything coming on. We don't want to give them Song Cartographer Evolved, and then 3 weeks later Master Chief Collection, and then 2 weeks later SPV3. That's just, I would say, too much and too short a time for people to really enjoy any of those to their extent. So We'll see. It's still all on schedule for being completed by November, though. We just may push it into the future a little bit more.
Someone in that chat asked me to ask a question. Can you confirm on Viadoc 4, if that makes any sense?
Oh, yeah, I did a series of vidocs on my YouTube, which were supposed to be weekly or bi-weekly, and the last one was like a year and a half ago. the problem with that is stuff is always changing, and we're always hard at work on stuff, and sometimes we just don't have the time to make a video about it.
Right.
So, and also with Sound Cartographer Evolve coming out soon, we don't want to start hyping and putting out a lot of PR for SPV3 until that's out. But once Silent Cartographer Evolved is out and we all get over our initial excitement with the Master Chief Collection, you should be seeing a lot more information and news.
Cool.
Very nice. We want to... Actually, we'll do that at the end. I'm going to move now to this week's bulletin. We got some stuff in terms of some Halo lore coming out of the bulletin this week. Nothing as far as new stuff for the Master Chief Collection, although there was a leak, and this is just a leak, so if you guys don't get hyped quite too early yet, but from TGS, someone took a picture of a map that was called Warlord, which by the picture looks like it's going to be a remake of Warlock. Again, it's not confirmed. This is just a leaked image, but we're supposed to hear more information probably from what I've been told is New York Comic Con, and that is coming up in about 3 weeks here. So that's probably when we'll get the announcement of the last map that's going to be remade for Halo 2 Anniversary. But just keep in mind, that's a leak, nothing official yet. We'll be talking about it, of course, when it is officially announced, whenever 343 decides to announce that stuff. But to the bulletin this week, we actually have the first appearance of Grim Brother 1 in the bulletin, talking about some good lore stuff. With the Master Chief Collection coming and everything, they're really going to dive into some of the background of the games that are going to be taking part in the Master Chief Collection. So Halo 1 and Halo 2 are definitely going to get some limelight there, especially Halo 2, with the terminals that they're introducing and the new pre- and post-cutscenes that they're adding by Blur to the beginning and end of Halo 2 Anniversary campaign. And, of course, we'll probably get some extra goodies from Grim Brother 1. And he said there's going to be lots of discussions on characters like the Arbiter and Sergeant Johnson, Tartarus, and some of the other stuff that they'll be talking about here in the near future leading up to the release of the Master Chief Collection, which is 48 days away.
Needs to be sooner.
I know. Yes. I know. I cannot wait for this to come out. I am so ready to have something else to actually play on my Xbox One. Titanfall only gets me so far. I still love playing Titanfall, but that's the only game pretty much I play on the Xbox One right now. So it's nice. It would be nice to have another game to add to that list. They actually did a community Q&A talking about some... I guess they took some questions from Twitter, and a lot of these are actually pretty good, and I wanted to read through quite a bit of them because I think they're really interesting to talk about. Won't go through too many of them because you can just read the bulletin for that, but I know there's some of them in here that will create some interesting discussions, so we'll take a few and go from there. But the first question in here is, what happened to the Hurgok from the First Strike and Virgil from Halo 3 ODST? And that's from at Mr. underscore Admirals. And Grim answers, quick to adjust or Virgil was interrogated by Oni for information related to what is now referred to as the accession at Voy, but were unable to acquire any actionable intelligence before the High Prophet of Truth arrived with the Forerunner key ship. The Hurgok recovered aboard the Gettysburg met a variety of fates in the waning days of the war. The survivors were put to work at the Infinity Project and at a high-priority Forerunner research site such as Trevelin. Which, if you guys know Trevelin, it's one of the Oni super-secret research centers that was talked about in the Kilo 5 trilogy. So, a lot of this stuff from ODST playing big parts in Halo 3, as you can see, from when the Prophet of Truth came to Earth with the Forerunner key ship, and looks like Quick to Adjust did not have a very good fate in the end.
Well, I don't think they ever really had a grand vision for the engineer from ODST, but
it was an interesting character.
Like, making it relevant.
Well, and they're expanding the fiction to really accommodate for it too. And that's one of the things that 343 has really done well with, I think, is expanding the fiction of Halo, going from where Bungie left it off, and really expanding upon the story of Master Chief going from Halo 1, 2, and 3. They haven't really focused on Halo Wars too much yet, although we do have a mention of the Spirit of Fire in one of the later Escalation comics. So they are tying that back in, and they're just... Reach was kind of an unfortunate breaking of canon, and they tried to clean it up with the Oni letters, although I don't think they did a great job. I don't think that was something that you could really clean up, but they've done a really nice job of introducing new stuff into the Halo universe, to the mythos of Halo. And the books are great, the comics are great, and just all these little tidbits of information that they keep on letting out is really making the universe that much more interesting.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like I was saying, I don't really think there was a grand scheme for that engineer at the end of ODST. ODST was its own little story about, you know, this is what's going on, but it's nice to see it not forgotten and actually remembered.
Right.
There's a lot of little things like that. Or even in Halo 4, the thing about Cortana's rampancy started with First Strike, really, more than anything else. I remember going into Halo 2 and being like, is she going to, like, betray the Chief? Like, what's happening to her? She could be dying. Then it's like, oh, nothing's happening here. Then Halo 3 came and it's like, oh, well, she's real messed up. Then you rescue her and she's fine. Now you get to Halo 4 and it's like, finally, this, like, little plot thread is, like, finally, like, been expanded and pulled into, like, a whole, like, weave of the story.
Well, aside from the normal rampancy in it, and then we're going to get into a... We're getting deep into some lore, which...
Yeah.
I don't know if people are going to follow too closely, but she was touched by a grave mind. So, despite the 7 years of normal rampancy to go through, she's probably been altered in ways that she doesn't even know yet.
Well, she was also a clone from Dr. Halsey's brain, too, wasn't she? That wasn't normal. Or people say that had something to do with her rampancy being a little bit
different
later. Yeah. Or however it was. So, I mean, I didn't even think about the grave mind, not that you're talking about it.
I mean, we can debate it for a while, but I think we'd all be in agreement. It's nice to see things remembered and brought back and made into main plots to the whole franchise and not isolated to little corners of books and then forgotten in games. Everything really seems to tie together and be really interconnected, which I really love as a fan.
Well, one of the things that I think quite a few people, when Halo 4 came out and the story that was told there was so much new information, so much exploring into the Forerunners and who they were, that a lot of people didn't like that a lot of this mystery was revealed and how quickly this information came about. But you have to, when you look at kind of the bigger universe that they've told since then, and with the release of all the books, they've done a better job fleshing things out, and I think they've realized that the way they told the story in Halo 4 wasn't exactly the best way to do it. And the books have helped clear up a lot of things. The comics have helped fill in some of the gaps as well. And the story of the Forerunners and the Flood and the Precursors, we got a small glimpse of it in Halo 3, and now it's just we're diving in full force into what's more than just us fighting the Covenant or fighting each other with UNSC, Oni, and the Insurrectionists. So there's a deeper...
I'm liking that, though.
There's a deeper plot to the universe within the Halo universe than there is just within our own corner of the galaxy. And that I find really fascinating.
I know that 343 has already come out and, you know, agreed that there was a little bit too much information overload in 4. I think a lot of that would have been a lot easier to swallow if the terminals were actually part of the game and made part of the main narrative instead of things you had to first hunt down and then go into a different game to watch. But yeah, no, I like the direction they're going. I appreciate, even if they do trip and falter at times, I like the direction it's going.
Let's see. Next question I wanted to bring up here was, 10 years ago, we were faced fighting a Covenant armada who just found Earth. On November 11th, we get to revisit that siege and, of course, the events of Halo 2. To my knowledge, Halo Fiction has never said how the Covenant found Earth, even though it was by accident. Will we ever get an explanation in fiction, or could we get an answer now? By Vava MK2. And Graham answers, two elements of the Covenant learned of the Earth's location separately. One was the Prophet of Truth, who was amassing a sizable invasion force at Unyielding Hierophant. The other was the High Prophet of Regret, leading his personal relic-hunting fleet from aboard the Solemn Penance. We will soon be answering how one of these elements learned the location of Earth. Hence, Terminal. At least that's what I'm assuming will be happening.
Having the Arbiter stuff is going to be really cool. The Arbiter backstory and the terminals dealing with the Covenant.
The thing about the Arbiter, though, is we do kind of get an exploration of his background with Halo 2 and throughout the Kilo 5 trilogy. So I want to see a little bit more of the Prophets. in there. Because the only thing we really have on the background of how the profit hierarchy works is during Contact Harvest, where we, and this is getting into spoiler territory, so if you guys are not wanting spoilers, then don't listen for the next 2 minutes. But it explains how the hierarchy of the profits work, and how based off of some foreigner relic that they had that told them humanity was basically the descendants of the Forerunners, and that they did not like that at all. So they kind of made up this whole crusade on going and obliterating humanity. So I'm not sure if that's going to be a part that plays out in the terminals, but it would be interesting to see how some of that blind faith that they generated for the Covenant is going to play into the Halo universe going from here on out. Because I think right now with the games, they're really exploring the Forerunner side of it, but we really haven't seen anything along the lines of the Covenant hierarchy and how their belief structure really works in detail outside of the books. And even then, we haven't gotten the super inside detail onto the elite's faith in the Forerunners versus some of the other Covenant races. Because I know for like the grunts and the brutes, it's not as much of something that's important to them. But I know for the elites, it's something that they very much respected. For the prophets, it's something that they more or less exploited, not necessarily respected as much. So kind of diving into both of those faith structures for the prophets and the Saint Haley would be actually pretty interesting.
Well, with you saying that the getting rid of the human race or whatever, was that a part of like the great journey that the prophets were telling everybody or telling the elites and all that about? Like, was that part of it, or was it just like, I still kind of never understood like the great journey or whatever. They, if they knew what the rings were and them lighting it up and all that stuff, like, I was always a little confused about that.
Yeah, I don't think Bungie ever really made it very clear. It was very confusing, especially with Truth's massive personality and voice change between 2 and 3. And 2 would kind of seem like he was deluded. And then 3, he was kind of villainous. And then Contact Harvest, he was like a brilliant schemer exploiting the religion. But in Halo 2, you kind of got the impression he was just misguided.
Yeah.
But still a schemer, an evil, misguided schemer.
It's still one of those things that I think is going to take a little more explanation into. And Penn said in the chat to read the Karen Travis's story in Evolutions. I haven't gotten that part. I actually am reading through Evolutions right now, but I haven't read that story yet. So if it's in there, then I just haven't gotten to it.
What's the new book coming out, though? There is one coming out really soon.
Broken Winter, I think is what it's called. It's Broken something.
Broken Circle.
Broken Circle.
That I have Amazon up right now.
Yeah.
November 4th.
Comes out a week before the Master Chief Collection. Yeah. So that's something that has always been kind of in the back of my mind whenever going through some of this stuff, how the prophets were able to kind of bend the truth behind the Forerunner stuff that they actually knew. And it was truth, regret, and
mercy
that were there when that Forerunner relic or something said that humanity was the inheritors of Forerunners and not the Shan Shaiyun or the Covenant.
Yeah, I mean, with Halo 3, a lot of people love Halo 3. I have a lot of fun with it too, but I was very disappointed how you go from having such a rich story in Halo 2 to really story crammed into 2 or 3 levels for Halo 3.
Yeah.
I almost feel like they got afraid because some people reacted so badly to Halo 2's story that they decided to just step back on story more and more, and they've kind of been doing it ever since, especially with what it appears in Destiny. I'm not really sure what's going on in Destiny, but it seems like there's a really rich story there. It's just not told really in-game.
Right.
And I feel like Halo 3 and the whole motivations of the Prophets was really a victim of that. So I really like that we're finally getting some sort of official narrative, tying it all together and explaining it rather than just speculation for another 10 more years.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Another question I wanted to bring up was Hang on, let me find it real quick. Oh, and this isn't too much into the deep lore stuff, but it may be interesting to some. But what exactly is Mjolnir Gen 2's power system? We have clear answers for that question for Mark 4 through Mark 6, and some plausible data about the last Gen 1 project. Mark 7, but Gen 2 is kind of there. Specifically, what kind, fusion, plasma fusion, hybrid, something foreigner, and where are the power supplies located? The chess pieces have sometimes seemed vague on this. They appeared to have a dual reactor set on the back, but some sets, Venator in particular, seem a bit impossible that this is the case with how tiny the packs are. This is Alakus, I think is how you say his name. Grim responds, all Mjolnir Gen 2 suits use a compact fusion reactor installed in the back of their torso carapace. Note that illustrations in the Halo 4 Essentials visual guides are simplified for purposes of clear presentation and should not be considered prescriptive. So it sounds like they're taking a little bit of creative freedom there when they're doing armor sets for multiplayer.
Yeah, it's kind of along the lines of how does Sergeant Johnson use his visor with no helmet? Question that was in the Bungie Weekly update for ODST. Some stuff you just can't look too deeply into.
And that's one of the things that I know for some people that are deep into the Halo fiction, they can just discount that as creative freedom, but there are other people that really don't like it. I know there's some people that really did not like the changes that they did for the grunts and the elites for Halo 4 because it was such a drastic change. And even though 343 came out and said this is a different sect of Covenant that hasn't really been involved with the peacekeeping that's been taking past over the last 4.5 years or so.
Another thing that people really had a big problem with is how excuse me, how Chief Armor looks a little bit different.
Yep, well, there's that too.
Yeah, we had a big debate about that at PAX. I don't know if you were there for it, Dust Storm.
I don't know if I was. I might have been, I just don't remember it.
I mean, there's this whole thing with, like, nanobots is changing it. But, I mean, if you look at the armor, I mean, he's been locked in a cryo tube, like, stranded in space. And the scars that are on his chest at the beginning of Halo 3 are still there on his armor in Halo 4. It's like, for me, it was clearly this is our visual update of it. But then you also have all of a sudden all the BR-55 HBs from Halo 3 are replaced by BR-X85s or whatever they're called. So, I don't know. I've never liked how they've always felt the need to explain their art changes with canon, because I think it just ended up biting them in the ass in the end.
Well, and one of the things that, for a franchise that is as big as Halo, you have to be careful with how people are going to respond to some of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the end, it just, they're not, obviously, going from, a last-gen system to a next-gen, or even a game with the, you know, graphic technologies that jump from 3 to 4, you're not going to throw in the Halo 3 battle rifle as it looked in Halo 3 and, you know, have it alongside all your shiny new art assets. It's just going to look
it's hard
and lazy. But it, yeah, well, it's funny because people gave 343 some flack, too, for reusing a lot of weapon models and asset models in the anniversaries.
Yeah, Halo CE anniversary had a lot of reuse from Halo Reach.
Yeah, and also from Halo 3.
Yep.
And people... honestly, it's not 343's fault. I think it was just a very bad precedent to set with trying to explain every little art change through canon. And Bungie did the same thing too, and never really explained it. Whether it be Chief's gauntlets changing, or scrapes on his armor disappearing, or there's another thing I didn't know forgetting.
Well, do you think that 343 should pay more attention to stuff that should be explained in canon, or do you think that creative freedom just takes precedence and they should just say for the sake of it, oh, we're using creative freedom here?
Well, it's a no-win situation for them because the precedent's already been set by Bungie of explaining changes in art with story. If I were the one art director for Halo 4, I would have had a very Halo 3-ish battle rifle for the first part of the game until the Infinity comes, and then switch over to their new battle rifle art style, you know, with the square scope and everything. And I would have tried to, I would have gone the extra effort for that consistency. But that's a lot easier to say than it is to do. You have to make all new effects, animations, You have to get fitting into the visual style of the game. Then you have to worry about your disk space and resources. And they kind of did it, where all of a sudden all the battle rifles disappeared once the Infinity comes, and you start using primarily DMRs. That's when you first get introduced to the DMR in that mission, as well as the railgun and I forget what the other thing is. But all the warthogs, regardless, when you're in the game, look the same. The snipers look the same. It's just a bad situation for them to be in.
Yeah. Although I do love the railgun, so
yeah. No, that's a fun.
That's a really fun weapon to use.
Like that. And the sticky detonator.
Yeah, sticky
det's
cool.
I'm not a big fan of the sticky det.
Yeah, I'd like it a lot better than the grenade launcher.
Grenade launcher, I thought was really cool, but they kind of like a lot. My opinion on Reach is there's a lot of really cool things and a lot of really good ideas in it, but in the end, I don't think it all really meshes well together. But
The one gun I really wish that never really made it in Halo 4, even though I liked it in the beginning, was the saw. That thing was just, I don't think it kind of fits. I think they should have just left the turrets. Like they should, if you wanted a machine gun like that, you should have just had the turrets or whatever.
I would have done it differently if it were me, but. It's still a fun one, especially against the Knights. It's a lot of fun. I think in the competitive multiplayer, my best, I like to describe the competitive multiplayer. I still have a lot of fun with Halo 4 multiplayer, but it's a lot more mindless than any of the others, I would say. And I think the railgun kind of, I mean, not the railgun, the saw shows that, because, you know, you get this gun and just like spray bullets fast as you can at this guy and like kill him. There's no real, sophistication or strategy with it. It's not the type of weapon you can really envision yourself doing anything else other than going into your room and spraying it all down.
Yeah.
You would with a plasma rifle, you would wait and, you know, ambush somebody, strip their shield and smack them in the face, or have a rifle duel.
Right.
Well, for the lack of a better analogy, it's more like a souped up SMG.
Assault rifle?
SMG.
I would say more a souped-up assault rifle since it's so accurate at first, but
well, I'm going more off the speed and kind of, because with the saw you do kind of, it drifts up a little bit, and the same thing with the SMG, so it's almost like a souped-up SMG in my opinion.
Yeah, right. I guess it is a lot like that. Kind of a combination of both with like, what is it, 120 round clip?
It's a giant clip, yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's not that much, but it is pretty significant.
I think it's 144, wasn't it, if I'm remembering correctly?
That's pretty crazy.
I think it's 144, if I remember it right. But no, I mean, it doesn't take a lot of skill. Like people may think of this differently. I mean, but to me, you don't have a lot of skill. You don't need a lot of skill with that gun. You basically point and shoot, and if you get a majority of the bullets, it will kill somebody. You know, it kind of takes the having some sort of skill with a gun out of the equation for me.
There's not much of a learning curve, I would say, too. It's pretty much aim, pull trigger, fill the air with lead. There's no pulsing of the trigger like you would with the assault rifle in a fight, or intelligent use of grenades along with it.
Yeah.
You just want to get that thing firing and filling the air with lead, and that's pretty much it.
Yep.
But I still think it's a lot of fun against the Knights.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in custom games, there's a lot of unique things you can do with it. But that's the only, like, between campaign and, like, custom games, that's the only thing I really use it for. I don't even use it in, multiplayer. Like, when I see it, I usually either go for a sniper, or if a sticky detonator pops up, I use that. You know, if something pops up with that, I usually go for, like, an overshield or grenades. I hardly ever use that.
Yeah. I think it's definitely one of those weapons that has more of a role in campaign.
Yeah.
One thing I like that we do is we solely focus on campaign, so we don't have to make any compromises for multiplayer. And if we ever do multiplayer, it's going to be about removing things from campaign and not trying to include it all.
Right, because you don't want to mess up the balance of the multiplayer sandbox.
Yeah, and well, I mean, but in Halo 4, you hear all this stuff about how they had all these creative ideas for the Promethean weapons and how much they prototyped. And then we ended up getting basically human gun clones with some added magic features.
Yeah. Like the bullets turning
shotgun fire, or ricocheting bullets, or, you know, multiple little explosions around one big one with the incineration cannon.
Yep.
But from what I've heard, everything they did, once they brought it to the multiplayer environment, people just wanted the more human and Covenant guns they were familiar with. So
Well, like you said, I don't think it was really unique enough compared to some of the Covenant and some of the human counterparts.
Yeah, I think the ammo system of that was a large part of it. And it's also kind of silly to have the mighty advanced forerunner weapons be just be balanced with the human weapons. They're this ancient race that made these halos and did this and did that. Well, their rifle is pretty much the same as your rifle. So,
well, and with the, I can see how it's hard to model new Promethean weapons because the Covenant technology is supposed to be based around the Forerunner technology. So you actually should see quite a bit of similarities between the two, but we really don't see that too much. And to me, they're kind of a little more exotic, especially if you look at the incineration cannon where it has the waveform orbs floating around the centerpiece.
Yeah.
That fire. So it's a lot more just like whimsical and more like sci fantasy instead of sci fi.
Well, the thing is, if you're saying that if the Covenant weaponry is supposed to be based off the Forerunner, I don't see a comparison in them at all.
There's some stuff there. That's what I'm saying. The bolt shot and the plasma pistol, the carbine clip, and the light rifle clip.
The light rifle, but the bolt shot, I don't see a connection with the plasma pistol at all.
Charge functionality.
Just the charge functionality doesn't do it for me.
Well, the shape of it too. You also have to remember that this is the first contact with the... It's not that you're having an encounter with the Forerunner. You're having an encounter with the Prometheans. And the Covenant may have never seen anything Promethean before. It could have been all based on other Forerunner tech. It's like 3,000 years from now, if people come here to Earth and they look at, you go look at stuff from, or even actually better analogy, even if you look at, 600 years ago, Chinese technology and architecture, and you compare that to European, you're going to find a huge discrepancy in everything, architecture, weaponry, maybe some similarities, but overall, you're going to see a huge jump in stuff. Which is probably why, as much as I prefer Bungie's Forerunner architecture and style over the Promethean stuff, it still doesn't bother me because in my mind, it's like they're a separate race. They're a subcategory. It's like when you play Age of Empires and the Germans have totally different looking buildings than the Chinese. At least that's how I took a look at it. But that might be getting a little bit off topic with what we were originally saying about the weaponry. But
I mean, everyone has their own opinions, I guess, about it. I just don't see the correlation that closely with it.
I mean, I can, going back to the plasma pistol and bullshit, I can kind of see it with the charge, and you have that single fire, but that, it's still, to me, it's still different. Like, you have an, I don't know.
Because there's a bunch of projectile things. Yeah.
I just don't see the Forerunner using, like, physical stuff. I guess they're, like, hard light bullets or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, it's all energy-based. Also in the bulletin this week,
I'm sure 343 kicks himself more for this than any of us, and I'm sure they have some ideas. I do think that trying to make it be so you can start with a battle rifle, DMR, carbine, or light rifle, you know, makes you have to dumb down master race of aliens that were supposed to be so powerful. I'd rather seen them be, you know, have the light rifle be like a super powered precision rifle that you can get is like an item on the map or whatever.
Well, and at that point, just make it super, super hard to get and make it to where you don't really get a chance to use it that often.
Yeah, but make it definitely have an edge over the other weapons.
Right.
Or something.
Yeah.
It's bouncing into the whole, okay, when can I get this weapon to actually use?
But Halo 4 decided to follow industry trends with their loadouts and all, you know, everybody's already been over it before. But maybe we'll see with Halo 5 with a focus on not having that. They'll do something really exotic and really alien with them without having to worry about how do you get these two weapons working in loadouts when you can also start with these weapons without making them be too powerful.
Right.
I mean, they're ancient master races of the galaxy. I think their weaponry should all be power weapons, player versus player.
Well, then so we have the precursors.
They're in a really tough situation. It's going to take them a lot of more prototyping and a lot more experimentation and trying to do risky things.
Oh, I don't disagree. But, they're in a tight spot.
I just feel bad for them when they get a lot of flack for it. But I do sincerely believe they tried and they had a lot of good ideas. It's just very difficult, especially when you have 10 years of these human and Covenant weapon dynamics in balance, and then to try to interject something that's supposed to be even more advanced than either two, and yet still not, and still make it feel like Halo.
This was also their first game.
Yeah.
So that didn't help matters that much at all.
From my understanding, its development, it was very close to turning out something like Halo 2. And you can kind of see some seeds of that, but for the most part, I thought they did a pretty good job. Yeah.
It sounded like development was all over the place.
Oh, I'm sure it was. They were just very good at, you know, going to this, coming out of this tailspin, it seems like they were in. And you can see some hints of that, you know, how much story is crammed in things, this whole idea of, you know, they introduced this whole thing with the three-way fights with the Prometheans and the Covenant. And the mission Forerunner, to me, reminds me very much of some of the Halo 1 levels, where you can tell there was a lot of repeated geometry and a lot of trying to use the same content over in very similar environments to build a different experience.
Yeah,
and it's also a very long mission, and there could have been a lot more stuff there about discovery of Requiem, but once you're done with that, you know, the Didax in full force, the whole exploration of the Prometheans is pretty much said and done in one mission. I'm sure they would like to have had that dragged out longer so you could have more interesting encounters between Covenant and Blue Prometheans before they were all allied. That was one of my bigger gripes about the game. They had this amazing opportunity to do three-way fights again like you had with the Flood. And instead, you know, within half a mission, they're allied with each other. And you lose that one unique opportunity you have in the narrative to do something really interesting with the gameplay before going back to the status quo, which is chief fights everyone.
That's very true. Yeah.
Another thing that I noticed, I mean, it wasn't that big of a deal, but the Forerunner like structures and stuff, they look different than Halo 3's.
Yeah, well, that's
in my opinion.
Kind of earlier that the Prometheans are not the same race part of the Forerunner civilization that built the other stuff. So for me, it's okay that, you know, they have a totally different architecture, just like you would say medieval time British or Germans would have from Chinese or you know.
The only thing is Prometheans are Forerunners.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, they are, but also everyone on planet here is ancient humans. Or I'm saying, well, let's take medieval humankind. Even back then, there's still a huge distinction. And even today, you look at Shanghai or Hong Kong compared to New York or Chicago or Dubai, and you have a really huge difference in architecture.
Well, I mean, the thing is, though, you have the Halo rings. I mean, how far back was it when the Didact made the Prometheans?
Well, I don't think it really matters when. I think it matters what the culture of this sect of Forerunner is and what their visual styles prefer.
Last couple things in the bulletin, though. Halo Escalation 10 is out. So if you guys have the comic, go read it. I will probably be reading it here shortly.
I read it this morning. It was interesting.
Okay. We'll leave it at that because we're not talking about it quite yet. Yep. Screenshot spotlight of... Blah, 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 blah. Screenshot spotlight of... Oh my gosh. Wow, now you can't talk. Screenshot spotlight of the week is DMR. Quite a few good ones in here. Some of my favorites is Filigreed Shadow by Receptor 17. My gosh, Receptor has 3 screenshots in here this week? My goodness. Army of Two by Spry Metal 53 and Breached by Gothic Lucy. Those are kind of my faves. You guys have any of them that kind of stick out?
Mine's got to be Caspa Lost by Mr. Martin, 85.
I should probably go quickly look at it.
Might help.
Gosh. A Noble Weapon's pretty good, too.
I like Breached. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, Breached is pretty cool.
And Reverie by Snape Peroxide.
Yep. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for coming out and listening to us through the live stream. Had a few new faces in here, I think primarily because of the guest that we had tonight. But it was still good. No, you were supposed to talk. That was the good thing. But we have a lot of cool information about SPV3. Thank you for coming on to talk to us, Masters.
No,
it was quite educational, quite entertaining, and I cannot wait to get the final product in my hands. It's going to be wonderful to play. I will be, whenever it comes out, which will be sometime next year in full, whenever you release the second half. But lots of cool stuff coming out from you guys. Do you want to give out any websites, Twitter, Facebook pages, all that stuff?
Yeah. Well, I guess you can put it along with the podcast. But halomods.com/CMT is our official forums. You can also follow me on YouTube. That's MasterZ1337. And also on Twitter, MasterS1337. And I try to do some type of update or fun fact about Halo each day on the Twitter. And if I don't, you can always tweet at me, and I'll always tweet back. So thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Thank you for coming. Remember to check us out on Twitch if you are listening to us from a downloaded show. We do our shows live every Thursday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. So if you want to come join the chat, you're more than welcome to join in on the conversation a bit. We'd love to see you guys here. You can also join us on Tuesdays and Wednesday nights for Tactical Tuesday and Wacky Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time as well. We kind of vary that between Halo 3, Halo Reach, and Halo 4, and sometimes Halo 2 Vista, so make sure you check that out. And we're actually having a special game night this coming Tuesday. We're going to be doing Halo 3 ODST achievements. So we're going to have two of us running achievements for the multiplayer, getting the 200,000 points for all those achievements, and then we're going to have another couple of people be running the campaign achievements. So if you're looking for some achievements to get in ODST, or you just want to come have some fun, then make sure you definitely stop by the forums this week, sign up, or just let us know. It's going to be mixed between me, BioWolf, HossSauced, and Godzilla Todd hosting. So make sure you reach out to one of us and get your name in the pool for participating. We'll be running it for about 2 to 3 hours for all these achievement things. So make sure you check that out. That's going to be this coming Tuesday, which is September 30th. Last day in September, so make sure you keep an eye out on that. Make sure you check out our social media sites. We have Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all that good stuff. And make sure you also check out our podcast network, which is the podka.st. That's a conglomerate of gaming-specific podcasts, including Guardian Radio, which is a Destiny podcast, ChrisCast, which is a Team Fortress 2 podcast, ReachCast, which is a PlanetSide 2 podcast. How to Murder Time is also in there, as well as Work in Progress. Make sure you check out the network. Lots of good podcasts to listen to if you're looking for some other taste from some other very good podcasting personalities. They do a very good job, and we are very honored to be a part of that network. Remember, guys, we are really fast approaching on the Master Chief Collection coming out here very soon. We're actually going to have Certain Affinity on either next week or the week after to talk about some of their development behind the Master Chief Collection coming out. So you will not want to miss that. And, of course, we'll be counting down the days to the Master Chief Collection coming out. We cannot wait for it to come out, and we cannot wait to see you guys there. So looking forward to everything you guys have coming forward for the Master Chief Collection. Make sure you go sign up on the forums and get involved there, and we'll definitely be throwing together a lot of game nights when it comes out and getting a lot of stuff done, so you will not want to miss it. Make sure you go over it, hit the forum, sign up, and be a part of the community. That's the conclusion of tonight's episode. Thank you everyone in the Twitch stream for coming out and listening to us live. Again, Masters, thank you for coming on and telling us about SPV3. Really looking forward to it. And until next time, keep on fragging Custom Edition.
We'll be sure to keep doing that.